is WGTD FM 91.1. I am so excited for this show. Many of you know that I attend Harvard, and I met today's guest during a class trip in Washington, D.C. for a class, and it has been amazing to watch her journey ever since. Her latest work is an essay that frames what it's like to be at the center of a universe, a world that doesn't seem to understand, care, and may even profit from your misfortunes. It is entitled The Event and is featured in the Amazon best-selling book, What Doesn't Kill Her? Women's Stories of Resilience. Please welcome writer and author Christine Kowalski to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk to you today.
Yes, it's going to be fantastic. It's been a minute. Last time I saw you was in Boston for a birthday party in person, and then the world just like went to complete crap.
I'm pretty sure that was like our last fun moment, and then we went home, and then we never left ever again. We were like, okay, the world shut down just because we had too much fun.
Right. And I was thinking about how you were so kind, because this was like, a birthday party, and you included like a Mariah Carey moment on the playlist for me. As everyone knows, that's my favorite. That's my queen. And so I'm thinking, wow, just how sweet that is. We're discussing like playlist, whether we're going to add a 90s star to a hit party. And then like we're home and I have all the time in the world to listen to Mariah Carey. So it was definitely a journey. I have to talk about your career. As you mentioned, you've been writing for a while, and you've made this, I don't know if it's a strategic decision, but it has definitely been a through line that your career has targeted young people and covered the stories that matter to them, especially young women. Talk about your journey to discovering your passion for writing. And was it kind of a conscious decision that you were going to discuss the issues of young people and young women?
I think that was along the way. So I have been writing professionally for about 10 years now. And some of my first internships were at the magazines that I grew up reading. So they were naturally something that was a transitional time that like I'm a teenager in early 20s and I had just, I still was a reader of things like 17 magazines. So to get to write and work there, I started writing on their website as an intern before the website was even really a news source. It was like a complimentary blog landing page that like directed you to subscribe. So it was very different than like the current news grind of 24/7 news on websites. And so I was definitely like in those years, maybe you would have grown out of those interests and aged up into maybe I would have wanted different publications. I was very much pulled back to where I was in high school and college and enjoying those publications. And at first I was just following opportunities. So I met a lot of great editors along the way, and especially magazines. And at that time of developing websites and trying to figure out where they were going to go next. Was it apps for an iPad, or was it podcasts, or like what was it? And so a lot of my editors had started going off to different positions and kind of inviting me along for that. So I'm really lucky that I got in at a moment where, I mean, it's not great to be uncertain about where the industry is going, but that a lot of my editors were trying out different things and inviting me to be part of it. And I met an editor along the way who was like, your combination of really high academic interests and really fangirl fun things like celebrities and Disney Channel shows and pop music is a great combination, because a lot of writing for teens and kids sounds like it was written by an adult of what they think kids want, or that they're the supervision for kids. So they're kind of shaping that story in a way that's not super authentic. And I'm glad that the people around me were recognizing that I could just speak with some authority, but more like a big sister rather than a really controlling voice of what kids should want and what they should be interested in, because this is what's out there for your age group. And I think because I loved it so much myself, it was never even, let's keep up with what's on television. It was like, I'll be 25 watching this too. I enjoy it. And so one of my favorite jobs and one of my longest One of the places I worked the longest was at Twist Magazine, which is under the umbrella with J14M Magazine, which were Bauer publications aimed at children and teens. And I really got to explore the world of really indulging in those fun things like fashion and makeup and pop culture and all of those fun celebrity moments that you're like, can you believe Justin Bieber just did this on Instagram? But also giving that some thought and understanding what goes through the mind of a girl who's reading that and why they want to feel part of something when they read that and really respected and not dumbed down just because it's kind of a silly interest. So I know sometimes when I talk about my job to adults and especially people in journalism, there's a thought that like, but you're going to grow out of this, right? Like you're going to start covering real news one day, right? And I think it's really important to respect especially things for young women as real news. And if that's what they're consuming, that you give them a lot of context to understand the issues that they already care about.
Wow. Well, Christine, I want to move on to this piece.
Sure.
Whoa.
Very different.
Very different. It is stirring, moving, highly emotional. It's one where I had my hand on my chin and I was like rocking back and forth as I was reading it. So let's start from the beginning. How were you first approached to take part in this book?
Yeah. First of all, that's very generous. And also, I'm sorry.
No.
I was approached. The editors who put this together are incredible Harvard-related women who are Carrie Garvin and Dr. Elizabeth Sharp Maketa, who conceptualized the whole thing and really brought it together. And they are writers in the Harvard community who reached out to a bunch of women that they'd encountered through either their classes or their creative writing seminars or just connections within the school. And from there it blossomed. So not everybody's part of the school. And originally the prompt or the call out was some kind of Phoenix rising from the ashes story that was like, what is something really momentous that happened in your life that you had to pick yourself up from and go and just continue living and just thrive from there. And so mine is about illness, which like I was saying, I write about celebrities and I write about not fluff news, but I write about happy entertainment, exciting fangirl stuff. And to suddenly shift gears and write, first of all, about myself is not what a lot of journalists like to do. And then to write about like the biggest health crisis that I've ever been through in my entire life and honestly try to find something entertaining or helpful within that story. So yeah, I don't know what else you would like from, that was the prompt.
And that was the prompt.
That was, and I, at that moment, this happened a couple years ago because every book just takes so much effort and years of work to put out there. And I can't believe how amazing they did with it. But at that moment, the biggest thing that, the only thing on my mind was I was so angry. I was angry at everything because once one thing starts going wrong and then everything piles on top of it, you're like, what is the point? I'm mad at everything that's ever happened in my whole life. And I was mad because I had just lost a friend who, to my knowledge, died out of nowhere. And I really didn't know if she had been ill for a long time or did she have a subtle illness. I certainly didn't know about it through being the kind of casual friends that I think a lot of us are now, where you keep in touch on Instagram and Facebook, but you don't really know what anyone's doing. And I was just like, how? She had this whole wonderful life ahead of her. And on all social media, by all accounts, she was doing well and she was happy and she was going to be getting married and she had so much left, right? And there's a bitterness that when any young person dies, it's just like, how do you make sense of that? And I'm driving back from her funeral and I start having a completely out of the blue worst event of my life. And I pull over and they just let it go. And I'm like thinking all of these things, like what is happening to me and is this like an emotional reaction? Is this like my health crisis? Is this what comes out of nowhere and gets me? And the story is about kind of the advocating for healthcare that comes after that. And you're like, I thought like the big moment, the fireworks, the awful pain was kind of going to be the end of it, right? Like you can get through that. But like just years of advocating for your own health is really the toll. And it was happening at the same time that my friend passed, but looking at what was happening in my life through the lens of her and what I didn't even know she may have been going through, maybe she was totally healthy. Maybe she'd been struggling for a long time. And we didn't know because nobody talks about that kind of stuff. Mm. So yeah, once I started talking about what happened to me, I would find that in a lot of friends. And I'd find other, especially women, who were like, I'm not even going to bring this up when I go to the doctor. Like, this is probably not important.
Mm, that is so... so true, because I've had experience even with my mother, who's a grown woman who has those conversations. And I want to talk about that in a little bit. But this is so descriptive. You make such an effort to take the readers there to that moment when you have what you deem the event. Was that re-traumatizing as you're describing that medical event? Or were you like, well, this is my normal, this is kind of what I'm used to?
Yeah, I had a bizarre reaction to writing it out. And it, I hope that it sounds like I wrote it the next day. Like, I hope it sounds like very vivid, but it wasn't. Like, I'll remember this forever. I'll remember exactly what that felt like. And in a practical way, to know if that ever happens again, what to do. But also, like, you don't forget that. I remember every single move. And now this has been about 3 years since this happened, and I still would write it the same way. I remember everything. So not re-traumatizing, but also I try to say everything with a little sense of humor. So I'll be like, of course this happened to me. Like, it's not funny, but it's kind of funny. Like, of course. The way that I was remembering it and looking back at it, I would say I have been, I've had chronic illnesses and other issues since I was a kid. So I've been in and out of doctors since elementary school. And a lot of, I'm sure any listener who has a chronic illness will know, it's not that it's not serious, but it's not usually seen as pretty serious unless something happens. Otherwise, it's the best, wonderful, most caring doctors will be like, well, you have to find a way to get used to it. And so thinking about it, I was like, this is my moment. Like, I wish this didn't happen. But because it did, this is going to be the thing that people take seriously. Like, this horrible, horrible thing happened to me. And the one good thing that I can find out of it is like, well, at least this isn't the kind of thing that people will say, well, you just like, rest a little bit and you get up and go to work tomorrow and you figure it out, which is a lot of chronic illness is like, hi, I'm in debilitating pain. And they're like, but you look so pretty. You look great. How could you be in pain? So I was finally like, this is the moment where I can embrace like being sick a little bit and being like, no, I have to do something about it. So remembering it, I think was not, it's kind of empowering to remember it because I was like, this is a big enough, this is worth a trip to the doctor. Like, this isn't something that I can be like, yeah, I'm always in pain, whatever. And I think a lot of that, I'm sure lots of people relate to that. You're like, well, if I had to pick every time I was in pain or something was bothering me, I would never do anything.
Could you share, as you said, this, and how, first of all, how sad that is, that you're hoping for a massive event, medical event in your life, to just be believed as you're going in kind of this revolving door of doctors and different service providers. I mean, that within itself is terrible. But what was going through the back of your mind? So you have this medical event, and I don't want to spoil it. You have to read this book. You have to get this book for those details. But so you have this medical event in which you are really shocked, scared, and you go into the doctor's office and you're sitting down. What's going on in the back of your mind as you're in that office?
Well, I didn't hope for it to happen, but like since it did, I was actually... I was actually really hoping for a breakthrough, I think, because I had had similar pains leading up to this moment, that this was just like taken off the charts of measuring how bad something is. And so I get to the doctor and they're like, of course, the standard questions of like, can you rate this on a 1 to 10? Like, how bad, how, like, how does this feel? And I was like, honestly, unless it was like a 12, I wouldn't even have made the appointment. So I'm like, it's bad enough that I'm here and like gonna file my health insurance claim over this. Like, I was kind of having this this moment of like, I just need like, and I, also getting a formal diagnosis is not necessary a lot of the times, but it sure helps. It helps you find whatever it is you need at that moment. So if you have a formal diagnosis and that just helps you get your health insurance to take it seriously, that's amazing, because you can't just start going endlessly to specialists that you weren't referred to, because who's paying for that? It might help you get the medication that you need, or it gives you the right term to Google so that you can actually look up information or find other support. So I'm like, finally, I'm going to have a name for something, or I'm going to get a test, like a really, I got like the cardiogram, I got the MRI of my brain, I got every test. And I was like, okay, I don't want there to be something wrong with my brain, but I'm so glad it was important enough for them to look, so that I'm not like secretly going through something and I'm going to just get worse and worse because no one's even checking. So, I mean, it helps to have this horrible thing in this like really bizarre backwards way. It helps that a big bad thing happened, and now like I can get my heart checked out, I can get my brain checked out, and stomach and everything else that would follow.
What I just love about this piece, there's so much that I love, but is that even though this is a medical event, what you do so brilliantly is that we've all had a situation in our lives in which we feel disposable. We feel like we don't know which way to turn. We're hoping for answers. Did you make a conscious effort through telling your story to allow the readers to connect to their own lives?
I hope so. One of our editors, Carrie, I asked her while we were editing and fixing up the story, the intro part that you referenced with the descriptions are like as I wrote it. That was the first draft, and it's just exactly what happened, so it stayed. But the whole rest of it is a work in progress, obviously. And I asked her two questions, and like, bless her heart that she like entertained this. But I was like, first of all, is it okay to be funny? Because this is not a funny story, but I don't tell any story at all like it's the worst tragedy that ever happened. Like, I want to contextualize this, and it's like, it's just a real life thing, and like, you do have to go on. So I hope it's at least a good read, and it's not something you'll walk away from just bawling. Like, you should have some, oh, okay, that was enjoyable to whatever extent it could be enjoyable. And the second question was, is it okay if there's no resolution? Because I struggled with like, is there a point to this story? Like, I'm telling you about this thing that happened to me, and I'm telling you about going to doctors and hoping for a diagnosis. And this part is okay to spoil, because like, there really was none. Like, they're like, oh, that happened, and we don't know why. And like, that just, it's another thing that like, it's so exhausting. And Carrie told me like, that's what people are going to take from that. Like, everybody has been there hoping for some kind of answers and been like, well, I'm glad you're feeling 10% better, but like, there's nothing to be done. And that's so disappointing. And like, as a writer, you're like, what was the point of that story then? It's not like rainbows and sunshine at the end. It's not like you could read the story and that same thing happened to me. I'm going to ask my doctor about that term that you used. Like, it's kind of a letdown. And especially in a book about women's resilience, the editors really did feel like that's a common thread of like, if you have some kind of issue or you have something that like hasn't been invested a lot, there's not a lot of research or there's not a lot of attention to it. Like, even the best well-meaning doctors are like, I don't have any resources for you. And you still, like, the theme of it is like, you still have to get up and move on and find a way to find your own comfort and somehow just keep living and keep keep doing your stuff, and but like never pausing on the advocating that it's important. Because I think the difference for this event for me was like the unwillingness to write off the experience. Usually you're like, well, the doctor said there's nothing wrong with me. I went through every test that they could find. Nothing wrong with my brain, nothing wrong with my heart. Thankfully, like I'm glad there's not. But to still be like, but that wasn't normal. So there is something wrong. And that's just a quest to find it and be taken seriously.
So I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent here. There was a point in your essay when you mentioned Demi Lovato's greatest hits. And I just have to say, we don't know her. We don't know her. So.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
It sounds like hell on top of hell in the doctor's office. So as you're in that test and you're having to hear the Demi Lovato songs, what was that like, I guess?
Oh, you want me to say something slanderous on the record here? I don't really feel strongly about Demi either way, but when the editors were going back and forth in my piece, they're like, what do you remember from that experience and or from all these doctors? And of course, my quest to make things funny, but also just this happened. Like, this is real. I didn't like make it up. It's absolutely the case. You'll be like, this is the scariest thing I've ever gone through in my life. And like, I'm a teen magazine writer who's written plenty about Demi, and I know every Demi song and I have every Demi album, right? And I'm like getting strapped into a helmet and they're like, you're gonna be in this tube thing for a half hour. Like, don't move a muscle, don't even twitch because we're scanning your brain. And I'm like, this is terrifying. And they're like, do you wanna listen to the radio or do you wanna, and I'm like, kind of no. Like, I'm a big music person, I cover celebrity, kind of not right now. Do I wanna have a critical opinion about Demi Lovato right now? No. And I was just like, whatever, like you could leave the classic station, like I don't care. And the nurse who was doing the test like just put on like a Demi CD, like there was nothing else the whole time I'm in the tube thing, just complete. And that, like, so you want to laugh because no matter what artist they pick, right, like if it was 30 minutes of Rod Stewart for no reason, it's like, what? And you can't do anything about it. And I'm like, this is so funny. And I'm really glad that the editors let me, well, that wasn't even in the original story. That was like, it makes it real and it makes it funny and kind of dumb. Cause I'm like, of course I can't even escape. This is kind of my job to know about pop stars and why is this happening right now? This is the worst day of my life. And also like Demi's watching over me, I guess.
You have to get this book. It is absolutely incredible. It is What Doesn't Kill Her, Women's Stories of Resilience, and it is available on Amazon. But I would be remiss if I didn't bring up BTS. The army would shank me if I did not ask you, who've written what, how many books have you done or magazines have you done about BTS now?
Well, I have to say the army is very compassionate. You just don't start some drama and we'll be fine. Okay. We are 11 issues deep on BTS, the Music Spotlight Collector's Edition, and we are writing another one, so we will be 12 deep very soon, for about the last 2.5-3 years.
Wow. And what's amazing to me, and again, I'm going to get probably potentially more shade for this, but you don't see Shawn Mendes's fans like ride or die, like level to the level of BTS, like the fandom that BTS has, to where you can write 11 going on 12 or whatever issues and they are still huge, massive sellers. I mean, there's just something different. Could you talk about the connectivity that BTS has with their audience that just makes them different than really anything going on in pop music right now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that BTS ARMY is artificial in any way. So it's not supporting BTS because that's what we're doing today and everybody assemble. I think it's really, it speaks to what's special about BTS themselves, of why their audience is so special and why there's such an enduring connection between people in a way that like, just, I mean, it can't be matched, but I don't think a lot of, I don't think even the most successful people on radio or on television, like, I don't think that every celebrity has even a smaller version of this. And yeah, I think BTS fans want authentic coverage of why the group is so special. And like I told you in the beginning, it's really important to me, whoever I'm covering, that I get to know the artist or the celebrity I'm covering and understand, not just regurgitating what the readers want to hear so that they like it because it reflects their beliefs back at them, but that it reflects, kind of without sounding too artisan, it reflects the essence of why they're important to begin with. So I'm like deep into ARMY. Like, I have connected with so many wonderful people on social media and where I can find groups, to be like, why is this group actually special? It really isn't matched by anything else, but also every issue, because there are so many fans and so many different things going on. One issue, we spotlighted a lot of the charity projects that fans have made on behalf of BTS, because a lot of times fans will coordinate efforts to donate to a cause that supports the guy's efforts or make little local things more international to the international audience, which is something that a lot of especially like pop stars or mainstream figures don't have. A lot of fans really feel connected to BTS's success story of, like, no one can deny they're a massive success. They're selling out stadium tours when that was a thing. I hope it's back, but they're selling albums that no one could get on that level of selling, the amount of albums and the amount of singles that they're selling, but still kind of just not being taken seriously at that level. Like, it's very hard for them to be taken seriously, especially in Western, on our TV shows and our radio plays. For it, I don't know, is it still seen as like this foreign language that we can't get past that, and just a misunderstanding? Is it because they've been wrongly associated with having young girls as their fans, which, as we all know, is definitely way less serious than having a general audience of fans? But BTS's fandom is really diverse and interesting and global, and they can speak to a lot of different people. And that story of like constantly being undermined and like not like they're clearly killing it, but it's just not as, I don't know if I'm phrasing that correctly. They're still underdogs even though they are at the top. And a lot of us can relate to that because you're like, I'm doing everything I can, and I'm still not being taken seriously. I'm still not, whatever, chosen first in gym class. I'm still not the first at someone's mind to be promoted at work. And I'm doing everything right. And so I think fans feel really invested in their success too, because they deserve it, because they're clearly artisans at this next level. If you see their choreography, it's like, who is doing it like that? But also there's so much more to the lyrics that I think a lot of Western audiences don't give them credit for, because it's just, it takes an extra step to understand why. And I don't know, a lot of pop music is, listeners to pop music are invested in finding that next step.
Well, Christine, we are out of time, and I just cannot thank you enough for doing all that you do and bearing a piece of your story for all of us in this amazing publication. Final question, if you could go back and tell that young girl anything from just a few years ago, anything about where you have come in the last few years, what would you say to her?
Oh, she wouldn't believe anything I told her. If I could tell the girl who wrote this story that it would even be published, never mind taken seriously and being for sale on Amazon and supported by so many people who don't know me or any of the other authors. I mean, she was so angry, and I don't think she would have thought that anyone would even listen to her. So anybody who's listening in any kind of way is really exciting. But I would just tell her that. I'd be like, people are listening, so it's worth like keeping talking. And all of the rambling and all the anger will find its way to someone who's actually listening to that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you. It's amazing.
Christine Kowalski is the essayist.